Delighted to welcome back onto the 9 till noon show psychotherapist, author, and coach Keely Taverna. Good morning to you, Keely. How are you keeping?
All is well. How are you?
Same. There? Everything's going okay. But we've got tons of questions in today. I don't know if it's the time of the year or what's going on, so we might crack on if that's all right, Keely.
Absolutely.
A caller says, "Hi, Greg. I feel like I can't talk to my partner about anything, whether it's my job, our relationship. He just talks nonstop about himself. What can I do to make him listen?"
You can highlight what you notice is one really good way. If you notice that the conversation always tends to be one way or continues to be about that individual, highlighting this issue can be particularly important. But also, we can also interject as well and try to flip the conversation so it becomes two-way. And then just pay attention if it tends to always come back to that individual, because that's quite important to pay attention to, because on a bigger scale, it may mean that when you try to articulate your needs or you want somebody, that person, to be attentive to what is going on for you, that can become problematic.
I think you can get into that quite quickly, can't you? Whereby it's like, you know, going from being supportive, how are you, I'm good, how are you, I'm good, to I feel terrible, well, you feel terrible, I feel terrible. What happens there? What's happening there at that point?
Well, sometimes, it, like I said, it means that the conversation will always be about that individual, and you end up becoming quite thirsty for attention, for some focus upon you. And no matter how much times you bring up something about yourself or want to talk about yourself for whatever reason, sometimes that person may not be interested. And we have to be careful with this, because sometimes we can set ourselves up for challenges.
Yeah. I recently moved in with my partner, and all he ever talks about is how much housework he does. The problem is it's not, it's in front of other people. And this person says it's like he's belittling me in front of our friends. And maybe he thinks he's involved in a bit of banter or something. I don't know. But it's putting this person out. What's your advice to them?
Well, that word banter can sometimes actually hold a lot of issues that somebody is holding within. So what I would suggest is it can be helpful to have that conversation away from people. Just say, again, I've noticed you tend to, you know, is there anything, do you feel frustrated about the housework that you do? Have the conversation in away from being with people, but when you sense it, the person might be open, so that it doesn't become a conflict. It just becomes an aspect for a discussion.
Yeah, I guess.
And you can obviously, you can share that you find it uncomfortable, and this seems to happen quite frequently. And, you know, if they do have frustrations, resentment, is there something that we need to talk about? Is there things that you would rather that I do, to be adult and mature about it?
Another caller says, "We've reached a place in our relationship now where we're very boring. We never go out anymore. It's just sitting at home watching TV and having takeaways." Now, the problem is one of them might think this is just the best life ever. But anyway, the person contacting us says, "How can I get him back to a place where we have date nights and we dress up and we go out? Date nights out of the house."
Well, I think sometimes we need to be what we desire. So if that's something that you desire, maybe that's something that you could create, that you would create that opportunity. And in doing so, then begin to have a conversation about that aspect of the relationship, that actually it would be nice if we do schedule days away, weekends away even, to do something different. Yes, and whilst that person may well be comfortable, it's important to share that you're becoming a little bit uncomfortable with the kind of mundanity of the sameness. I think that's a really important aspect for us to take responsibility for. And encourage somebody, the other person, to also initiate. So it might be this month I initiate, then it's your turn. for them to think outside of the box.
Keely, I mean, obviously it's quite understandable that a lot of these conversations come back to conversation, and we've touched on this before, but there's new listeners and viewers all the time, so let's go back on this again. You know, we share our lives with people that know us better than anyone else. They know our ins and outs. They see us in all our glory or whatever it might be. But often people sit down then beside them and something stews in them. You know, it can be a little trivial thing like this. My girlfriend has a really annoying pet peeve. How do I approach the subject without offending her? And maybe you can answer that question as part of the broader question. Yet this person that is so close to us that we feel we'll spend the rest of our lives with, it seems we struggle from the questions that we get in here to touch on sometimes really quite basic things that are an annoyance or that might improve the relationship. What is the problem with talking? Because you get couples down, don't you, as you talk it through with them. And then, of course, the floodgates open in terms of everyone has an opinion then, if you know what I mean, in that sort of controlled environment. But why does it take us so long to get things out into the open?
Well, I think sometimes what we're trying to do is we're trying to have, what do we call it? We smooth things over. We don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill. The challenge is this can often lead to resentment and bitterness, and in the end can start to create a rift in the relationship. And this is why there's much value in catching the small things and beginning to articulate, but often not when, sometimes it's not when it's happening, because that can push the situation to become high conflict. But actually in other situations, bring up your irritation. And sometimes, you know, there's relationship cards that you can also get to initiate conversations about, you know, what are the things that you appreciate, what don't you appreciate. To begin that communication is incredibly vital, because a lack of communication is one of the most important factors that actually are problematic in relationships.
And they're not just relationships like sexual relationships or partner relationships. Often it's about having opening a line of conversation with a teenager, for example, or a sibling or a parent, isn't it? I mean, obviously I frame a lot of these questions as they come in because it could be one person going out with another, but all the rules apply across all relationships, I presume.
Absolutely. But you've got to choose your battles as well.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you have to choose your battles, and you have to work with whether it's something you can also compromise. Some of us, you know, some things we have to learn to accept as a part of the individual, because trying to change someone into something that they are not is not healthy, it's not wise. But where are you happy to compromise so you don't end up feeling like you sell yourself short? Because often the little things, if we don't deal with those, they manifest and we end up having big rows about, I don't know, the not leaving the toilet seat up. But actually, it's symbolic of something deeper.
Mm.
And as a therapist, I'm always trying to get to, it's not the situation, it's what principle lies underneath.
So it's easier for us to talk about the wee on the seat and vent a little bit than it is to really talk about what might be triggering something trivial enough being annoying. I'm not saying it's trivial, but yeah, okay, I get you. All right, yeah. A caller says, my partner has a history of cheating, and even though they have never cheated on me, I'm still struggling with trust issues. How can I move past this to build a healthier relationship with my partner?
Okay, so the challenge is, like, you know, their history, that they have a history of cheating. However, you don't think that's the situation for yourself in your own relationship. But this may be about your own insecurities, and that is actually work for us to do independently. What is it about trust in some? What is it? Do you trust yourself is always the question I'm curious about. Do you lack trust in yourself? So if we lack trust in ourselves, we're often looking for our validation outside of ourselves. Trust issues can sometimes stem back to our attachment issues. If we had parents who we couldn't trust would meet our basic needs, it means that we then, as an adult, go out into the world having lack of trust in ourselves, which often can manifest itself into our intimate relationships. I think that's definitely inner work to focus upon.
Yeah, but then there's external factors. This person might have friends that are saying to them, oh, Leopard never changes their spots or whatever. You know, they could feel they're being chipped away from the outside as well.
Well, absolutely. But if they're, you know, we all have history. if there isn't any evidence to suggest that somebody is lying to you or cheating on you, and if you believe that, and there's nothing about their behavior that you find suspicious, you know, the phone behavior is always interesting, holding onto phones, keeping phones, hiding phones. Sometimes there's two phones. If there's not, then that is actually your own stuff.
Yeah, okay. They're not living in the, they're not actually living in the past, they're living in the partner's past, which is perhaps not very healthy at all.
Yeah, which can link to retro something jealousy. The book I'm reading at the moment, retrojective. I'm doing the word of just disservice.
I know exactly what you're saying, though. You're getting jealous about a situation you're not really a part of as such, yeah.
Absolutely. You can end up living in that space.
Okay, two more if you have time, if that's okay. My partner and I come from different cultural backgrounds and our families just simply don't get along. How do you navigate this issue to make things work?
I think it's very challenging. When you look at, let's just take Meghan and Harry, those cultural differences are particularly profound. And it's most definitely a challenge. You've also got class challenges, cultures, customs, that can also create conflict.
Can you have it all then? Are some problems too big to overcome?
Sometimes it can be. I think we have to be very it's one of the reasons why in some cultures the talk of, you know, having arranged marriages is about making sure people match in terms of class, education, and status. And there is many benefits to that. I think arranged marriage, according to those demographics, and there's no two ways about it, that love does not conquer all. And depending on what challenges do arise, sometimes there's a benefit, because sometimes when the two of you together, it can be actually easier when it's the two of you. But when you bring the family dynamics into the equation, problems can arise. I'll be interested in to know that kind of... The different mix.
And it's interesting you say, because it's kind of like, and I think what you've said there is really quite factual, but these kind of conversations are quite difficult to have nowadays, because for fear of, you know, for fear of a backlash or being cancelled or something. But we have to be able to talk about realities too, don't we, Keely? Because this is people's lives and you know,
absolutely,
things have been established for reasons sometimes, and not necessarily the terribly negative reasons that, you know, people might try to attribute to them either.
Exactly, exactly. It's one of the reasons why I believe it's really important to have culturally competent therapists. So if you do go to a therapist, that they're culturally competent, so they understand how important those factors, the cultural, race, class elements, feature into the relationship, because often if they're missed, it can mean that there's a lack of depth in terms of getting the support.
And hey, someone might say, pack your bags, move somewhere else and live your lives together. But the bottom line is, after a while, those family connections start tugging and then other types of problems start. And that's why it's so bloody complex.
Well, to be honest, if you've married into a family, say an Asian family, which come from a collective community, it's very family-based. There is no I, it's a we culture. Mm. And if, for example, you've married a Westerner, which tends to be I culture, those are massive challenges that can impact on the relationship, and something that must be paid attention to.
All right.
Attention to.
Keely, one more, if you don't mind. Can you ask Keely what a non-custodial parent should do if the other parent is alienating their children against them, i.e. bad-mouthing them, vilification, lying, breaching access agreements, etc.? What would she say to her ex and child? Is there any way to stop this form of, they call it child abuse, I'm not questioning them, but other people might feel that word's a bit emotive, and the coercive control, but not named in legislation in this country, Keely. Hence, it's not recognised then by the likes of our child services, mental health services. So I think this person wants you to speak to the person who is bad-mouthing them, vilifying them and lying to them and denying them access to their children. So rather than them seeking advice, I think they're sort of saying, well, what would you say to the person who they believe responsible for this type of action?
Well, for example, if you're dealing with somebody who might have a personality this who's manipulative and controlling. You've mentioned the word coercive control, brings up the word narcissism, which is an area I specialize in. I think you have to be particularly mindful, and I think having legal frameworks in place is incredibly important. I'm also a massive advocate of the Family Visit app, so that there is, you know, documented evidence that can also be of importance should there be a legal case. But I think there's individual, because people with those types of personalities do not take too well to being challenged, and it can exacerbate the situation. My encouragement would be to seek legal advice and get a legal framework in place so that there's crystal clear clarity about how the arrangements will take place. And with regards to the child, again, I'm a massive advocate of getting therapy for the child, family therapy, which can be complex when dealing with the reality is it's a tricky situation.
And I think parents need to realise what potentially, if not inevitably, their actions are going to mean, not only for the child in the moment, but how they function in society and in relationships as adults.
If you're dealing with a very difficult personality type, you're not going to get that rationale. Pressure. You're just not going to, and it's going to feel like banging your head against a brick wall. One of the benefits of putting a legal framework in place is that it's solid, and that is something that I really do encourage.
All right, Keely Taverna, thank you so much. Psychotherapist, author and coach. How do people get more details on the work that you do? Because you do some of this work remotely, and I think for a lot of people listening to this, actually, to be able to have access to services outside of the immediate area, because, you know, we're a small country, let alone a region thereof it. So, Keely, how do people find out more about you and your work?
You can find me at keyforchange.com.
All right, lovely stuff. Thanks so much, as always. Apologies for some slight breakdowns in the line there, but listen, we got there in the end, got most of it out. Okay, back with more shortly. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We welcome on to the programme now Antoinette Keegan, who is a Stardust campaigner. And as you would know, the inquest into the Stardust fire, which claimed 48 lives in Dublin 42 years ago, got underway this week and has been hearing emotional testimony, which it will for the next number of weeks. And of course, given the nature of the inquest, it's going to be right throughout it. Antoinette, thank you for joining us. How are you feeling, Antoinette? It must be just a massive range and mix of emotions for you.
It is. And good morning to you, Greg, and thanks for having me on your radio show. It's a massive week. Well, the inquest being opened, it's like a weight gone off my shoulders anyway, that it's finally happened after 42 years. A huge campaign, like, this is from day dot 1981 right up to now, to this day. We've campaigned for truth and justice, and we wanted the answers, and finally they're on the way now.
And, you know, people like yourself able to attend this inquest, but as you say, it's been campaigned for so long, and you can't help but think, and you particularly think of those that were campaigning for this but haven't lived to see it actually happening. I mean, it's heartbreaking when you think about it.
It is. Like, my father, John Keegan, he was the campaigner from 1981 up to the day that he passed away, which was December 1986. And then my mother followed suit. Then she became the campaigner, and she fought half her life, like, looking for justice for our two beautiful daughters, Mary and Martina, and 46 other victims. It's been a long road for her, but like that, she has said right that she'd never give up, and to her dying bed that she would continue. And she passed away on the 14th of July 2020, and all she kept asking was, when is the inquest starting?
Yeah.
So she just was so determined, right, to get the truth out there for our loved ones, right, yeah, that died in the Stardust. And she wanted answers of why and how they died.
And just the life that your mum led, dealing with the loss of her two beautiful daughters, as you say, Mary and Martina, having to try and move forward, caring for remaining siblings and people as well, having to be strong in that regard, and then having to find time to campaign so hard for something as simple, it should be as simple as the truth, to dedicate so much of her life, her adult life particularly, to that. What an amazing woman. What a burden too, at the same time.
She was, and I have to say, for such a small, beautiful woman, she was a Trojan, absolute Trojan. The strength that she portrayed, right, was absolutely fantastic. I would never, ever walk in my mother's shoes, right, because the strength and power that she had, and she was a force against, like, the government, that she would never give up. And it's through my mother now that this inquest has opened, because she fought so hard for it, and I honour both my parents, right, for what they've done, right, and it's been very, very tough for all of us, like my brothers and sisters, and even like the grandchildren, because we've gone into a fourth generation now. Like, I have a grandson, and like, he's only 12, and he knows all about her. And my sister has a granddaughter, and her granddaughter knows all about her too. Like, they're so young, like, that, like, they've grown up with it.
How, I mean, obviously, you're on the record to say that you hope that this inquest finds the truth being unlawful killing. What would that? I don't want to jump the gun here, but what would that mean? Because obviously, it doesn't bring anyone back. Obviously, it doesn't fix all the hurt, but maybe it makes moving forward easier. Is that how you view it, Antoinette? If we were to arrive at that verdict,
yeah, it would. Like we've lived in a very, very dark place, right? From 1981, we had the inquest in 1982, and that inquest was basically a medical verdict. We've never had a verdict, and like, you know, to have a verdict, a proper verdict put on each victim that died, right, in the Stardust, right, would be absolutely amazing, right? And where the day is coming that we're looking and we're praying, right, that we'll get the same as what Hillsborough got and Bloody Sunday got. That's what we're hoping for, because like, the truth and it has to come out, and then the evidence from the witnesses and the experts. This is the first time that it's ever been put out there in an inquest. And it's a huge inquest, right? The biggest inquest in the history of the state. So, like, it's going to take approximately 6 months, right? But we have enough time. Like, with this time, we want to get it done right, and we want the truth on public record of what happened to our loved ones.
Yeah, for sure. And the first part of this, and this has been taken from other inquests, is we are hearing about the 48 people that passed away, and we have family members or other appointees talking about their loved one. Is this difficult? Is it liberating? Is it important to get who they were onto the record? How does that part of this inquest play into your emotions, Antoinette?
I think it's absolutely fantastic, because for 42 years they've been just a name and a number. Right, and now we're putting the real life to them of like what their profile was, who they were, and what they had ambitions for, what they succeeded in school, and the hobbies that they had, and the holidays. We're actually putting a real human side to them, that they are not just a face, that they were real people. And I think it's fantastic. Like, my sister Lorraine is doing Martina's next Thursday, and my youngest brother, he was only 3 at the time. He's doing my eldest sister, Mary, Penn Portrait next Thursday. And then my very dear friend, Eugene Kelly, he passed away 3 months after my mother died. And I honestly believe he died of a broken heart, because he was broken hearted when my mother passed away. She was like a mother to him, and he loved her. I'm going to do his brother, Robert Kelly's. And although, like, I never really knew Robert, but I did through Eugene. Like, he was like, Eugene would tell me all different stories about him over the years, and I think, like, you know, even when I'm reading out Robert's, I'm going to get upset, because he was a young lad, right, that had ambitions and had his whole life ahead of him, and he was taken too young, just like all the victims were.
Antoinette, we wish you all the strength that you need to get through this next 6 months. I'm sure you're going to attend as much as you can, but it's going to be very difficult. So we wish you, as I say, all the strength, and I'm sure you have a wonderful family to support you, and you are also supporting each other, which is clear from your last comments. And I truly hope that the proper verdict is found through this process, and it gives some peace to all of those affected, the hundreds and thousands of people directly affected by this going forward, Antoinette. And maybe we might speak again, but for now, thank you so much for chatting to us.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Antoinette Keegan, a Stardust campaigner, sister of sister of Mary and Martina, who perished on that tragic night, and as you predeceased by her dad, who was one of the original campaigners, and her powerful mother as well, who took up the mantle, was there all along, of course, but up until her passing as well, and to all the other people who won't get to see the outcome of this. And as I say, hopefully it is the right outcome. 42 years they've been waiting for this. Off the back of our conversation with Dr. Joe, an RIC inspector who was asked to form the Gardaí. His grandson lives in Dunloe. We're just not going to mention the name because I'm not sure you know if they would be happy with that. But thank you very much for the text. It is incredibly recent history too, isn't it? Right. Ronan Gallagher is a spokesperson for the We Green Way initiative. Good morning to you, Ronan. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hello, Greg.
Now, you're highlighting a section of the Derry Buncrana Inishowen Greenway. What's going on here? Oh, this is the bridge end to Buncrana section, is it?
Yes, it is. So I've been in touch with the council for a little bit of background. This is a project that I championed from approximately 2013, 2014. And I managed to persuade Donegal and Derry councils to look for funding to build the Inishowen Greenway. And the council officials at the time, you know, through 2015, 16 and 17, you know, did a sterling job to secure EU funding for this. And then I was subsequently employed on the project. But since my employment has ended with Donegal County Council, it seems to have gone very, very quiet with regard to the Donegal or the Derry Buncrana section off the Inishowen Greenway. And although the route corridor for that section was published over 2.5 years ago. So I've asked the council, where are we with the plan to submit this route for to Ambord Planola for planning? But that has been thrown into disarray, really, if you look in from the outside, because only this month the council have announced the preferred route corridor in Bridgend for the N13, which is a four-lane highway, to bypass the village. And the route will basically obliterate the route which was selected for the Greenway.
So it has just, the Greenway's been brushed aside in favour of this four-lane road, effectively. That was actually going to be my next question, because I was curious if that most recent announcement is... So that means then, can the Greenway form part of this new project running alongside it, for an example? Do we know if that's even in the offing?
Well, it's an interesting question. And if you look at the documentation on the project's website, they have cross-sectional drawings showing you what the four lanes will look like, but there is no capacity there for cycling.
Wow, here we go again. Major investment without any provision for walking or cycling.
Yes, and you know, you may or may not know, but every local authority signed up to the Climate Action Charter in 2019, and it is now a legally binding under the Climate Act of 2021 and the subsequent Climate Action Plan of 2023, we must reach net zero by 2050. Mm. And every local authority must be 50% energy efficient by 2030 and must have a 30% reduction in carbon emissions by that date as well. So how does a four-lane highway in going around Bridge End meet those targets? I don't see it in the first instance. And what we also have here, and we do have a lack of leadership as well. Mm. And this is from our elected representatives. And they seem to be unwilling to defend measures that are in the public interest.
Ronan,
do we know? People of the area.
I want to come back to this with you at another time when we've got more time, because I think this is quite significant. But Ronan, do we know how much money has been spent up until now trying to develop this Bridge End Buncrana section of the route? Because this sounds like money that's been flushed down the toilet if the preferred route for the N13 runs along over the top of it and there's no provision for it in the plans.
And that's a big question. From my understanding and having worked on the project, I would be confident in saying that over 1 million euro has been spent developing and publishing the preferred route corridor for the Derry to Buncrana section of the Inishowen Greenway. And that includes staff that were employed, including myself, engineers, the cooperation between Derry and Donegal, the consultants, the sub-consultants, the website work, every aspect, you know, producing constraints reports, producing multiple reports with regard to, you know, why this route has been chosen, and all this was published over the last number of years.
But we are in an information vacuum here, because you quote a statement from the council on the 4th of April, which suggests that they have issues around this have been resolved and a clear path forward has been identified. But we're not privy to that. So, as I say, it's a bit of an information vacuum here.
Yes, and I've gone back to the council and just asked the council, can they elaborate on this? What does this entail? So I'm still waiting for a response.
Okay.
But I think the people of Inishowen and the people of Donegal, in a wider context, need to know what is the path forward. Mm. What is the clear, using the council's words, the clear path forward? What is it for the Buncrana to Derry section?
Get a car and use the four lanes. I hope that's not it. But anyway, I'm being facetious there. Ronan, we're going to make our inquiries with the council to answer some of the questions that you've also posed as well. And maybe we could talk again to see what level of satisfaction you have with their clarifications in that regard. And we'll leave it at that and then chat again when we have more info. What do you think?
That's great, Greg. Thanks.
All right, take care,
interest.
Ronan. No, it's our pleasure. Ronan Gallagher there of the We Greenway Initiative. As I say, we'll make some inquiries of our own. Have a lovely day. Thanks to Niamh, who worked on the programme, assisting Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show. Have a good one. Chat to you at 9.